Ecclesiastes chapter 1 from verse 12. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. What is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied myself to the understanding of wisdom and also of madness and folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. For with much wisdom comes much sorrow. Into the more knowledge, the more grief. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. I'll test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. What does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. I wanted to see what was worthwhile for men to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers, and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of man. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work. And this was the reward for all my labor. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and everything I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Then I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise man has eyes in his head, while the fool walks in darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I thought in my heart, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What do I gain by being wise? I said in my heart, this too is meaningless. For the wise man, like the fool, will not be long remembered. In days to come, both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise man too must die. So I hated life, because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over all the work in which I've poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my knowledge, over all my toilsome labor under the sun. For a man may do his work with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. Then he must leave all he owns to someone who has not worked for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What does a man get for all the toil and anxious striving with which he labors under the sun? All his days, his work is pain and grief. Even at night, his mind does not rest. This too is meaningless. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. And this is the word of God. Congregation, many musicians serve as prophets of the living God without knowing it at the time. From the lyrics of the songs that they write, they proclaim the truth of God and his word. Through their songs and through their lives, truth is revealed. And that shouldn't surprise us. It shouldn't surprise us. We live, all of us, we live in God's world. And as we look around us, and if we are keen students of life, if we are keen observers of what life is like, then all of us will have insight into what is true and what is real. And if God can speak through Balaam's ass, he can speak through a musician as well. 52 years ago, Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones did a cover of our text this evening. They repackaged the message of the preacher in Ecclesiastes for a new generation, for a modern generation. And they said, "I can't get no satisfaction." And that, friends, is the message of the preacher here in our text in Ecclesiastes 1 and 2 this evening. A quest to find satisfaction in wisdom, to try and find satisfaction in work, to try and find satisfaction in pleasure. We see from verse 12 that this is a quest undertaken by the king. Chapter 1, verse 12, a quest undertaken by the king, a biography of the life of Solomon. And I think it's very fitting that someone like Mick Jagger should preach a similar message today, or, well, 52 years ago, a similar message. For what are rock stars and celebrities if not the kings of our day and age? A real king is bound by the law. A real king is bound by decorum and doing what's right. There are rules to follow. There are customs to observe. There are traditions that must be upheld. But a red carpet celebrity on the Hollywood A-list, on the other hand, they can do anything. They have the money to do anything. And generally that's exactly what they do. Many of them do. The sky is the limit. They can do and they can obtain whatever they want. And yet despite being free from many of the constraints that hold you and I back from doing whatever we might want, even Mick Jagger's forced to conclude, "I can get no satisfaction." What about Solomon? How did he do in his quest for satisfaction? Did he do any better? Let's take a look together at God's word and at the three ways in which Solomon sought lasting satisfaction. And the first was by the way of wisdom. It's no surprise, is it, that wisdom is the first place where Solomon turns. After all, Solomon was the wisest king, the wisest man who ever lived, the wisest king who ever ruled in Jerusalem, who, having been offered by God anything he wanted, chose wisdom. What would you have chosen? Wisdom is what Solomon chose. What is wisdom? Wisdom has been variously defined. I think one of the best definitions of wisdom is that wisdom is the art of living, the art of living well. Wisdom is the art of living well. Being able to reflect carefully on whatever the situation of life is that you find yourself in and drawing the right conclusion, taking the right action, coming up with the right response, whether that's words, thoughts, or deeds. The skill of living well. So Solomon begins his quest for satisfaction with wisdom. Can he reflect on the situation that we find ourselves in, as we saw last Sunday, living or life in a world that's constantly changing but never changes? And through that reflection, can he find something valuable? Can he find something that will help him to get up out of bed in the morning and live with meaning and purpose? Can he find something to make life worth living for? And the answer is yes and no. For a start, his reflection does produce an accurate summary of life. He says, "What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless, a chasing after the wind. Solomon's saying it's like there's a futility to it all. A futility to it all. The more you try to grab hold of satisfaction and meaning in life, the more it slips away. It's like when you go down to the beach and you've ever tried gripping tightly a handful of fine sand, and you pick it up and the tighter you hold, the more easily it just slips away through your fingers, disappears. Or to use another example, trying to find meaning through careful reflection is like trying to see if the light in the fridge is working the way it's supposed to work. Have you ever wondered that? Is the light in the fridge working? Is it on? The door's closed, you can't tell if it's on. If you open the door, it's a bit late, you can't tell if it was off before you opened the door. Did it just switch on when you opened the door, or was it on all the time? So it is with the intellectual, the person searching an educational philosophy for the answers. Solomon says, what is twisted cannot be straightened. In other words, he's saying the futility that we feel is unfixable. It's like trying to pull out a nail that's embedded in a block of 4x2 with your teeth instead of a hammer. Or he says, what is lacking cannot be counted. It's like a piece is missing from the jigsaw puzzle. And no matter how hard you put the rest of the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle together, it's going to be missing. You're not going to be satisfied with the end product. And so more than anyone else, the student of life ought to realize the search for satisfactory meaning is a vain search. Solomon says, for with much wisdom comes much sorrow. The more knowledge, the more grief. When you start from yourself and try to reason out to find a satisfactory scheme to make sense of life and put it all together, Solomon's saying, you are trying in vain to accomplish something that is unachievable. The more the knowledge, the more the grief. And at this point, someone might say, well, at least wisdom might help you navigate through life together. And surely that's at least something good, isn't it? Chapter 2, verse 13 seems to think so. I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise man has eyes in his head, while the fool walks in darkness. So, well, finally we've gotten somewhere. Wisdom is something good. Wisdom is better than folly. Wisdom's got something going for it, worth pursuing. But not so fast. Solomon's not going to leave us there. What does he carry on? He says, but I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. The preacher came to his senses. What's the point of being wise, he asks. The fool dies. The wise person dies. You're left with nothing, no matter how wise or foolish you've been. Death makes fools of us all. There's nothing left over after life has ended. Wisdom cannot bring satisfaction. It cannot solve the problem of death. And so Solomon makes a second attempt to find satisfaction. This time he seeks satisfaction in pleasure. In pleasure. What would you do if you had all the money in the world, if you had an unlimited overdraft facility on your bank account and you wanted to find happiness? What would you do? There's a chance, reasonable chance, that you might do something pretty similar to what Solomon does. And here in the beginning verses in chapter 2, that's what Solomon does. He begins by experimenting with drugs. After all, everything's legal when you're the king. Then he hires the comedians of his day to make him laugh. He commences great public works projects, infrastructure projects, as all politicians are wont to do when they're searching for lasting meaning and lasting satisfaction that's going to outlive them in their short times in office. He engages in building projects to make a name for himself. Then anything desirable that he saw, he acquired. He went out and bought it. He built mansions. He planted vineyards. He paid the earth for extensive landscape gardening. He filled his houses, his palaces with employees aplenty. If someone had 1,000 livestock in their herd, Solomon went and got 1,001 just so he could have more than anyone else. He worked his way up to number one on the rich list. He fills his palaces with more wives and concubines than he has sense. And what's his conclusion? Verse 10, he says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. To quote another prophet, another contemporary prophet, another musician, think of Bono in his U2 song. He hammers home the reality of this quest to us. What does he say? But I still haven't found what I'm looking for. That's Solomon. I've gone out, I've done everything, I've bought everything, I've gained all the pleasure you could possibly imagine or think of, and I still can't find what I'm looking for. Pleasure's a dead end. That's his message. He's not saying that pleasure isn't enjoyable. Don't misunderstand him. He's not saying that pleasure isn't enjoyable. Well, it's enjoyable, all right? That's why we seek it. Feels good at the time. But it doesn't last. It doesn't satisfy. The pleasure is, we might say the pleasure is empty. Bitter disappointment's all that remains when you make pleasure your search, your quest for meaning. Solomon says, I realized it didn't mean a thing. It was like chasing the wind. Now, we live in a culture that idolizes pleasure. The good life, a life of ease. And we can be so tempted to jump on the treadmill just like everybody else. A treadmill that leads nowhere, that just goes round and round and round. A treadmill that leads to emptiness. A treadmill that leads to bitter disappointment. And so I ask you this evening, is pleasure what you're living for? Are you tempted to think that if you had everything, then life would be good? If you had everything like Solomon did, but it'd be different for me. Let me ask you, if pleasure is it, if pleasure is the place that you want to go to find satisfaction and meaning in life, then why is it that celebrities and billionaires commit suicide? The ones who do that, they're the honest ones, we could almost say, couldn't we? The wise ones. For they've actually reached Solomon's wise conclusion. Everybody beneath them on the ladder, on the pyramid, is just trying to keep higher and higher, get more and more stuff, but find more and more fame. They've got to the top and they've realized exactly what Solomon told us 4,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, that it's meaningless. And the rest, well, for a time, they pretend that they've made it, that they're enjoying the happy life. But the procession of divorces and drug overdoses show that it's all a lie. It's a front, it's a mask. A mask to hide the emptiness inside, which pleasure can't take away, can't satisfy. Wisdom doesn't work. Pleasure doesn't work. Here's attempt number three that Solomon undertakes. Seeks to find meaning and satisfaction and purpose in life in work. In work. That's captured in part in the monumental building projects that Solomon's undertaken. His constructing of beautiful houses and gardens and everything that goes with them. But it's true also for ordinary people like us. Through work, we get stuff done. A builder builds a house. A painter paints it. An accountant produces a set of annual accounts. A doctor or a nurse fixes sick people. A preacher preaches a sermon and hopes that things will change for people. Do the things that I do provide satisfaction? Do they provide meaning? Do they provide lasting purpose in life? And Solomon says, no. What do you get from it all? You get tired. That's what he says. That's what you get. Your bank balance goes up through hard work. You buy stuff with it, but as we've already seen, there's no satisfaction in that. And one day you die and it all gets given away. It's given to people who haven't worked for it. Solomon, like the cynic, says, and they'll probably waste it. Probably ruin it. But even if they don't, then so what? You've burned yourself out working ever so hard every day of your life for nothing. And that isn't just true of work in the traditional sense. Take another example. Take sport for an example. That's hard work. Maybe that's the difficult toil in which you seek satisfaction, not in your work itself, but in what you do after work. You work at your play, and you play at your work. The endless quest for success and for glory, even though nobody can explain what winning really achieves, what it accomplishes. Take the FIFA World Cup, for example. I mean, Australia is trying to qualify for the World Cup at the moment. Break it down. 22 men kicking an inflated round thing around a patch of grass. One side get in a certain place more than the other side do. They won. Hey, big deal. So what? Does it really mean anything? I don't think so. All you've done at most is distract people from the emptiness of their lives. Perhaps temporarily. As the Simpsons put it, the road to the Super Bowl is long and pointless. I mean, when you really think about it. Even if you work yourself to death, again, no lasting satisfaction. Being a workaholic doesn't pay any dividends. It only exacts a price, a toll. So wisdom doesn't work, and pleasure doesn't work, and work doesn't work, and we still can't get no satisfaction. Where to from here? Here's the fourth thing we see. We see hope. We see hope. For the first time, perhaps, in Ecclesiastes so far, a faint glimmer of hope stands against what is otherwise a bleak and black backdrop. Solomon writes in verse 24, a man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too I see is from the hand of God, for without him who can eat or find enjoyment? To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom and knowledge and happiness. Solomon's saying there is satisfaction. Satisfaction is not something elusive that is unable to be obtained. There is satisfaction, but never when satisfaction is your goal. When you pursue satisfaction, it's elusive, it's slippery. You can't catch hold of it, you don't obtain it. But when you pursue God, all of a sudden you might find it. Loving God, following Jesus, seeking to please the Lord brings with it a reward. An eternal reward, yes, but also a reward now, a satisfaction that's unable to be obtained anywhere else. Purpose that fills the otherwise vast chasm of meaninglessness. God gives the gift of enjoyment. Enjoyment of the small pleasures in life. For there is still the general heavy burden of meaninglessness. There's a sense of futility that's built into the world on account of sin that makes life still difficult. It's difficult to escape. There are There are weeds as part of the fall, and you encounter them every day, which is why your life and your work is hard. And you struggle because you weed the garden, you weed the veggie patch, only to find the weeds coming back again. There's that cycle, that sense of futility that all of us experience and will experience. But when you and I accept our limitations, the reality of life under the sun, then God gives the gift of enjoyment. The small pleasures of a cool beer on a hot afternoon after you've been out working in the garden, mowing the lawns, a glass of crisp white wine or a hearty red with camembert or brie, freshly baked bread lashed with butter, sex with your spouse, listening to a good piece of music, the pleasure of a job well done with your hands and being able to tick it off your to-do list, sitting in front of a roaring fire and it's just so snug, or the satisfying sleep that God gives you after a hard day's work when you've accomplished much and you can rest and be satisfied. And friends, it is only a life lived in the knowledge of God that enables those joys, those small joys, to be enjoyed, to be treasured, to be truly enjoyed. For the joys are just momentary, you know that. They don't last, and in themselves they don't bring lasting satisfaction. But God does bring lasting satisfaction. And in Jesus we find the source of all wisdom, all joy and pleasure and productive and satisfying work. You know as well as I do that the joys and pleasures of this life are fleeting and they will pass away. The lasting answer to satisfaction is not found in the here and in the now. Both the righteous and the sinner pass away, as Solomon says. And all that we have gained does indeed get given to another. I couldn't help but be reminded of that today, as May's sons already began thinking about who were they going to give their mum's things to. They don't need them. What's left? It's given away. It doesn't last. But for the one who knows God through Jesus Christ, there is hope. Lasting hope, hope that transcends this at times a life of sound and fury signifying nothing. So today, give up your quest for satisfaction in things that cannot satisfy you. Your quest to find satisfaction through drugs and intoxication, through sex and sensation, and riches and an achievement, whatever you might be living for, leave behind the emptiness, leave behind those vast attempts you make to create meaning and purpose that isn't really there. Seek joy and meaning in God. God, the giver of life. God, the giver of hope. And you will find satisfaction. Amen.